From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Some cities are now using tiny houses to address the lack of affordable housing. These homes are as little as 200 square feet. Could they help house low-wage earners in Baltimore? Greg Cantori, a nonprofit consultant who's helping to launch a local tiny house project, thinks there's promise.
If you look at Baltimore and the vacant house issue as the disaster that it is, you could look at that then as what would FEMA do? They would move trailers in, let people live in them temporarily, while the homes are either reconstructed or built from scratch.
Cantori says tiny houses fit the bill even better. Is the future of affordable housing tiny? Two advocates and an urban planner weigh in on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cass. We're On the Record. Cities across the country increasingly face a lack of affordable housing. Baltimore's no exception. Rates of homeownership in the city are much lower than the state average, and among those who rent, Baltimore has one of the highest eviction rates in the country. Today we're discussing an unusual approach some cities are taking to the crisis. Tiny houses. Tiny houses are just what they sound like. Many of them are 200 square feet or less. Cities including Nashville, Dallas, and Seattle are experimenting with using them as housing for residents of low income. Baltimore may soon join them. The local job training nonprofit CivicWorks has started a tiny house project. City Lab, a website run by Atlantic Magazine, recently wrote about it. Here to explain the idea is Greg Cantori, past CEO of Maryland Nonprofits, now the head of Cantori Cares, a pro bono consulting firm. He kickstarted the tiny house project. He owns a tiny house himself. Welcome to On the Record.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here.
And also with us is Davin Hong, principal architect at the Living Design Lab and the designer behind CivicWorks' tiny house project. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Greg Cantori, how did the CivicWorks project come about?
It started many years ago when I was head of Light Street Housing, and our mantra back then was homelessness to homeownership. So we were actually able to work on the continuum of helping formerly homeless men and women purchase a home over a 2 or 3 year period. What we learned is that the only way we could make it affordable is through subsidies, through the state, the federal government, the city. But we were able to sell those houses for about $60,000. The frustrating part was is that we had to cobble together 13 to 15 different sources of funding, grants, loans, subsidies, and so on, to make the project work. And that's typical for affordable housing. So over the years, I kept thinking there's got to be a better way to do this. And when I saw something about tiny homes about 8 or 9 years ago, I realized that might be part of the solution. I had lived on a sailboat for about 5 years when I was going to college, and I realized that living small really can reduce your overall housing expense. And so about 5 years ago, purchased a tiny house with my wife and kept it on our so-called big house, our 1,400 square foot house lot. And we use that as my office and as a guest house. During that time, of course, then we saw the HGTV show come on where the Tiny House Nation, Tiny House Hunters, it became a fad that is now becoming more and more mainstream. So I approached CivicWorks and said, you know, you're working on workforce development on here for the Youth Build Program. You know, these are young adults that are 18 to 25 years old, and they're getting their GED, and they're also working towards getting a construction apprenticeship certificate. And the problem was is that they were working on multiple different properties. They were only seeing parts of the project as they were doing this. They would work on one site, then move to another site, and transportation is a real issue. So I said, what about if you were to move to a tiny house strategy and build tiny homes in a single location, which could be built much quicker, and you'll see the entire construction from start to finish within their 6 to 12-month youth build program. And at the same time, we could also provide additional affordable housing in our region. So it was a double win. Amazingly, the staff and the board took a leap of faith and without any additional grant money, built the first tiny house with Davin's design on spec.
And that was in 2015. Davin, how did you get pulled into this project?
So I'm actually a board member of Civic Works, so they naturally asked me for help. And also my practice, Living Design Lab, is an architecture firm, but we specialize in finding innovative solutions to social and economic problems in the city. And so looking at how to create a really well-designed tiny house that becomes, at least for this one, was a demonstration piece on how to do really green construction and having everything you need in a small footprint.
For those of us who have not seen the house, the first house, mm-hmm. And how many are there at this point?
Just the one.
Just the one. Describe it to us.
It's about 240 square feet. It's on wheels right now. It's a trailer. And when you look at it, it looks like a house. It's got traditional windows and clapboard siding on the outside. And when you go inside, there's one main space which has built-in sofa, a built-in desk. There's a small kitchenette, and there's a bathroom with a shower. And on top of the kitchen and the bathroom, there's a sleeping loft. The entire house may be small, but it actually has everything you need to live comfortably.
Greg, in an op-ed in the Baltimore Sun earlier this year, you wrote, quote, "Tiny homes possess the ability to create new skills, empower individuals, save thousands of dollars and our environment while breaking through de facto racial and economic segregation," end quote. That's a lot.
It's a lot to ask for one tiny house, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, you know, the average tiny house is now running between $50,000 to $70,000 for a fully outfitted one purchased from a manufacturer, including Civic Works. And some people think, wow, it's a lot of money for a tiny house, but it is truly built to the specs of an actual house. In many cases, it actually exceeds the specs because it has to be able to drive at 70 miles an hour down the highway. But that really brings in the affordability piece, because if you're looking at a 15-year mortgage, and you can get basically RV loans for something like this, you're looking at $300 to $400 a month to purchase that. Now, that's only the beginning of the savings. The other part, of course, is your utility costs, which is a very big cost of owning a home. Your utility costs can be very, very low. The one that Civic Works has is ultra efficient. You're looking at basically tens of dollars a month, not hundreds of dollars a month, to be able to afford utilities. Because it's on wheels, there's also the opportunity of locating them near where you work. It may enable folks not to have to have a car. And car costs anywhere between $6,000 to $12,000 a year to own and operate.
Davin Hong, who is the target recipient? Is it first-time home buyers, young people starting out, homeless?
I think it's wide open in terms of who would want to live in a tiny house. It's not for everybody, and I don't think anyone is promoting it as the be-all solution for housing in Baltimore City. But it's certainly an inventive solution to help people get on their feet or to be able to have a lifestyle where they could save money and have some disposable income for other things. I think it'll really help on the affordable housing end. There is also interest in using it as a permanent supportive housing solution for people transitioning out of homelessness. But I think that's also appealing to young professionals, students, anybody who doesn't really care to have high rent or large mortgage and have some of the burdens of what Americans typically take on mm-hmm. in their lifestyle.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Kast, speaking with architect Davin Hong and former CEO of Maryland Nonprofits, now a private consultant, Greg Cantori, about Tiny Houses, a local project aimed at using tiny houses to address lack of affordable housing. I'm still having trouble with the affordable part of it, because if you're talking $60,000, $70,000, you mentioned an RV loan. I presume that's easier and it takes less down payment, perhaps, than a traditional home mortgage. But still, you're talking about a big upfront cost.
The average affordable housing unit in Baltimore now is well over $180,000 per unit. that puts it more in perspective. So when you're looking at 50 to 70,000 versus 180,000, one of the exciting opportunities of a tiny house is that we can work with finance institutions like credit unions and even foundations that have loan programs, work with them in a way that makes this ultra affordable on a monthly basis, whether it's rent or a mortgage of sorts, unlike any other way of doing affordable housing. As I mentioned before at the very beginning, these affordable housing providers are cobbling together huge groups of subsidies in order to bring that $180,000 into something that they can afford. So a lot of times it's like one-third of your income can be applied towards a rent or towards an expense. The average low-income person, that tends to be in the $200 to $400 a month range. So the tiny house without a subsidy falls well within that range, which is very exciting.
One thing we haven't mentioned, as I understand, tiny houses are currently against the code in Baltimore City. How big a problem is that?
That's our biggest problem. We have a tiny house task force that has been meeting with the various city officials over the last year. We actually have a meeting with the mayor scheduled coming up at the end of this month. What can we do to create an ordinance or amend the zoning and or codes in some way to allow tiny homes in our region? That's what we're working on right now.
Devin, you look like you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I mean, this is uncharted territory. I mean, there are other cities that are experimenting, but I don't think anybody's yet figured it out. I think it's a really exciting opportunity for Baltimore City to lead and to demonstrate what's possible. But as with a lot of things, it requires strong leadership from the top.
Well, I'm sure many listeners hearing a conversation about a possible partial solution to affordable housing think of all of Baltimore's vacants, including vacant lots, and somehow think, okay, is there a connection here between tiny houses and repopulating vacant holes in neighborhoods? Is there?
Yes, there is. If you look at Baltimore and the vacant house issue as the disaster that it is, you could look at that then as what would FEMA do, the Federal Emergency Management Agency? They would move trailers in to let people live in them temporarily while the homes are either reconstructed or built from scratch. And we could modify that analogy to Baltimore and saying that tiny homes would be, especially on wheels, would be a great solution for vacant lots where the houses have been torn down to occupy that space until either a permanent structure is put in place or next door to a vacant house while that vacant house is being reconstructed in a very affordable way.
How many people can live in one of these houses?
Comfortably, I think really a 200 square foot house would be for one person, maybe a couple if they're really close.
if you're talking about, say, a parent and child or a parent and two child, is there a tiny house that could?
I think we could do 400 square feet and still call it a tiny house.
That's right, 400 square feet or less.
And I think that could accommodate a small family.
That's right. And this also is somewhat of a cultural question, too. Remember that for many years, folks have raised families in very small houses that we would consider too small for that family. Mm-hmm. Just a quick stat is in the 1950s, the average house was just over 900 square feet, but the average household size was four individuals. 1970, it was 1,400 square feet, and we were down to about three individuals per household. 2015, 2,700 square feet, and only 2.5 people. So the houses are growing to a gargantuan size, and yet our households are actually shrinking.
So what do you hope happens next? What is Civic Works planning to do or hoping to do?
Build more houses, because we want to increase the workforce development program so that more young adults have an opportunity to get into the construction trades in a great way. That will launch their careers in a really unique, exciting way for them. The other piece is that we want to see the tiny houses perhaps as ADUs, accessory dwelling units, for folks that have yards to host a tiny house in their backyard. So someone who's earning $100,000 a year could have someone earning $10,000 a year in the same neighborhood.
Devin Hong, how many homes could you see Civic Works creating in a year's time?
Well, we're aiming for maybe a half dozen for now, but we hope to be able to scale up.
Well, I wish you luck. It's very interesting. Thank you for telling us about it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Davin Hong is principal architect at the firm Living Design Lab. He works with the nonprofit Civic Works on its tiny house project. Greg Cantori, former CEO of Maryland Nonprofits, now head of Cantori Cares pro bono consulting firm, is a tiny house advocate as well as a tiny house owner. Time for a quick break now. When we come back, we'll talk to urban planner and architect Klaus Philipson about tiny homes as a solution to affordable housing. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about an unusual approach to the affordable housing crisis, tiny houses. Several cities are experimenting with housing low-income residents in these homes. Many of these homes are smaller than 200 square feet. Before the break, we heard from advocates for a tiny house pilot project in Baltimore run by the nonprofit organization Civic Works. Now we turn to urban planner and architect Klaus Philipson, whose firm specializes in community revitalization. Klaus Philipson, welcome back to On the Record.
Thanks for inviting me.
What do you think about this movement using tiny houses to address the affordable housing crisis?
I see the tiny house in a long history of architects really concerning themselves with social issues and affordable housing, which started really in the 20s with the Congress of International Modernism that was French, really, and Frank Lloyd Wright did the Usonian house, was supposed to be an affordable house that would be mass-produced. Corbusier did large apartment towers as affordable, presumably also appropriate to the industrial production, using the modern age technology to think that they can make the houses or the living cheaper that way. And then all the way to Katrina houses and to shelters and homeless situations. So architects have concerned themselves over a long period of time. Many listeners may know that, particularly from the Katrina houses, that these things were not always successful. So the attempt of an architect sitting at the drafting table and drawing board to kind of draw up this cool Swiss Army knife of housing that has all the bells and whistles on it, but is compact and cheap and small and fits in a pocket, is a one-sided approach where the architect has a lot of fun with it, but it doesn't always work in the real world.
Well, what do you think architects may be missing then when they sit down at the drafting table? I mean, what element might make it work? Or is it not workable?
Well, I mean, it's not like this was all useless. All the efforts I described kind of changed the paradigm in architecture. So originally, before the modernist movement, the attempt was always to replicate sort of the grand architecture of the ruling classes. And so make them grandiose looking and make them smaller, but just still look grandiose. And so the Usonian house, or also the living machines of Corbusier, were attempts to really find a new path, so that they, when they did that, did not immediately create a solution that was instantly workable. It's not surprising. What were they missing is probably an enough participation of the people that are really affected. So these living machines, which we saw in Baltimore in form of the Hope 6 or high-rises that were all in the Hope 6 projects imploded, they were sort of sad imitations of this Marseille project that Corbusier did as the original living machine. And in Berlin, they had a building like this that stood vacant for a long time because for social housing with families and children, one found out, you know, that the high-rise isn't particularly a solution. In the case of the Katrina houses, they looked cool, but you know, the residents in the Ninth Ward in New Orleans, they had really their own culture. And the architects kind of ignored this or had some sort of formal gestures that picked this up. But most people were not happy with their houses once they moved in. So you have to really, particularly on these small projects, try to work with people and maybe let them even participate. I mean, like Civic Works is educating people on the construction and maybe build them like Habitat folks build to sweat equity.
Well, specifically in Baltimore, what do you think would be what's the context that would, if this moves forward, what would tend to shape designers' ideas about what a tiny house should be? I mean, Baltimore has this row house tradition.
Right. So that is, I think Fred Sharman, the architect professor from Morgan, made already this comment on the Civic Lab article in Atlantic Cities, that the tiny house is difficult to extrapolate and kind of build up in scale until you have an urban context. So when you take row houses and demolish them and then you build tiny houses, then instead of a continuous row of row houses, you get a tiny house sitting on a lot. The tiny house 8.5 feet wide, and the lots, I mean, even the narrow lots are about 12 feet wide, so you have side yards and distances between the houses. Does that make a city? I guess nobody really imagines that large parts of the city would be tiny houses, so the application to Baltimore isn't really necessarily dealing with a large amount of vacant housing, but dealing with two problems that we definitely have, which is a lack of affordable housing and a lot of homeless people. And so I can see applications in both instances where the tiny house is a kind of transitional solution.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with urban planner and architect Klaus Philipson about the feasibility of using tiny houses to address the affordable housing crisis. In a post you wrote last year on your blog, Community Architect, you noted that about 50 tiny homes still cost less than a unit that would conform to what the Federal Housing Department calls an affordable apartment. I mean, if that's the case, why aren't more cities building tiny homes?
Yeah, in that article I referred to village clusters that are kind of in between homeless sleeping under bridges and having a tents in a campground. And one step up from the campground, those cities have created sturdier shelter constructions that are kind of tiny houses. And they are forming a village on around a village square. They have maybe some little streets even in them, just for pedestrians. But the expensive functions of the house, the bathroom and the kitchen, were moved to central units. So there was in the village center, there is then a shared bathroom facility, just like on a campground, and a communal kitchen facility. So the cost of those structures isn't comparable to the tiny house, which has all those functions inside the house. And the tiny house movement is really interesting because it takes the original thought that I mentioned, that you could take industrial production and apply it to something that is actually then built like a vehicle, a house that is becomes a vehicle, where the mobile home and the Airstream and the diner came all out of that approach of thinking that you can build livable structures like a factory does a car. And the tiny house kind of takes this back and says, no, wait a minute, I'm still making it a vehicle for code reasons.
It might be on wheels and RV mortgage.
Therefore, it sits on a vehicle frame, but it is above that vehicle frame built in the traditional method of 2x4s and custom sort of produced. And it doesn't have the attempt of using aluminum or using prefabricated sandwich panels and all of that. So it really takes the kind of more romantic notion of how a structure works and how you get a sense of place in it that is really comfortable, like, you know, small but very comfortable and very comforting to the inhabitant. And uses this mobile home technology approach just as a rules to get around the building code, because the building code requires minimum room sizes before it is approved as a home.
And do you see that changing?
The International Building Code could have a section that deals with tiny homes. I don't know whether there are any of those efforts afoot. Cities could individually, they usually adopt the International Building Code as a model code, and then they can make modifications themselves. And certainly they could say, as they often do, when something is proposed that doesn't fit the code, then you just get dispensed from that as either an experiment or as a planned unit development or whatever. So yeah, cities could do that. This is not an insurmountable obstacle. I would find it actually good if one would get away from that 8.5-foot width limitation.
A lot to think about. I really appreciate your spending some time with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Klaus Philipson is president of ArcPlan Incorporated, an architecture firm specializing in community revitalization. Earlier, we heard from Greg Cantori, a pro bono consultant for nonprofits, formerly CEO of the Association of Maryland Nonprofits, and from architect Davin Hong of Living Design Lab, who designed the tiny house built by the nonprofit Civic Works. We have links related to that Civic Works project at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.